Welcome to Manager Tools. Today's topic, how to handle meeting killers. Chapter 3, The Naysayer. Here we go. We've talked about meeting killers before, yeah. And today we're going to talk about a naysayer. And for those who don't remember, this harkens back to an article that was headlined, Meet the Meeting Killers, that was in the Wall Street Journal. What, 15 May 2012, in fact.
Right.
And we agreed with some of the things they said. We have a slightly different perspective on some of them.
Generally, I find most writing about management suggestions to be awful. I mean, not just bad or benign, but truly malignantly awful.
Malignantly awful.
Undeserving of printer's ink. I mean, really bad. This one was tolerable. In fact, we're going to highlight a couple of places where it was actually good. And this article redeemed itself by having a list of things we totally agree with that we know work at the end of it. But this is also my favorite cast in this series simply because naysayers really tick me off. And unfortunately, the more senior people with a lot of experience, often take on the naysayer role, particularly with younger managers. And I find it unprofessional. Oh, yeah, I just want to share my experience with you and let you know there's risks here. You just want to strangle them and go, risks? Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, let's come up with something that's really profitable that has no risk. And that'd be good. Yeah, so I have a particular bone to pick with naysayers. And look, this cast is like the others in the series. We're going to tell you what they do, and we're going to tell you how to stop them from doing it. It's pretty easy. Yeah.
Okay, so first of all, what do naysayers do?
I probably shouldn't start with a non-behavioral statement, but this will give you some sense of their mentality. Naysayers love to clothe themselves in the righteousness of being correct. They know that bringing up something that's going to be bad or that's going to be a risk or going to be a problem is a good thing, is a righteous thing to do. Well, of course, we want to know about our risks. And they often talk in a pompous way about it. And here's how they sound. They say things like, well, I'm only bringing up this point because I care about our outcomes, which is crap. But
yeah.
Anyway,
none of the rest of us do. Okay.
Yeah. I'm only bringing this up because I don't want us to go down the wrong path. No, that's not why you're bringing it up, but okay, fine. I'm only bringing this up because I just want to share my concerns now before we get down and realize it's too late and we'll have wasted a lot of time and money. No, that's not true. I'm only doing this because I want us to avoid the past mistakes that I've seen others make. It's never them that have made it. It's always somebody else they watched make it. I'm only sharing because I want everyone to know what the issues are before we move forward. That's not true. You're trying to torpedo something. Folks, the naysayer is not the one who has three good ideas and then has one cautionary note. This is the person who sits back and waits and then tells you all the problems with the particular plan. And they also say, oh, I'm only bringing this up because I know you really meant it, boss, when you say you want to hear from us. So all voices have a place at the table, so to speak. I'm only bringing it up because I think this really could be serious. We should consider it. Or I'm only bringing it up because I want to play the devil's advocate just to be sure we're doing the right thing. All of which are just gigantic fibs. And frankly, I hope for some of you, if you've heard it, and I suspect this is even more common in the technical world, it makes your skin crawl a little bit. It makes my skin crawl a lot. And by the way, folks, if it doesn't make your skin crawl, and you think, you know, actually, Mark, I'm going to disagree with you here because that sounds a little bit like me. I share my seniority. I share my guidance with people. And I think that's a necessary part. And we all voices should be heard and blah-de-de-blah-de-de-blah-de-blah. If that doesn't make your skin crawl, folks, rest assured those phrases make other people's skin crawl, particularly executives. Like, yeah, okay. Again, you mean there's not a risk-free path to enormous profitability? Oh, darn, I must be in the wrong business. I'll become a monk. And if you think you mean well, good, fine. I'm not going to attack your intentions. But that kind of well-intentioned behavior can absolutely be the death of a team. And for some of you, you know it. What do naysayers do? They bring up things that are problems. They tell us why things won't work. They interrupt us to point out the risks of stuff, right? They say, hey, there's some risk here. Okay. tell me something I don't know. Guys, just to be clear, every executive I know, when you say, well, there's a risk here, the executive mentally rolls his or her eyes. Like, yeah, okay, there's air here too. Lucky us. If there weren't air here, we would know. In all things, there's risk. Okay. Sometimes naysayers make their disagreement or even their disdain known by simply refusing to play. Right? Some of them are stupid enough to cross their arms and lean back in their chair and say, no, I'm good. God. I'm fine. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's fine.
Yeah, that works. Like, no. That's a good
thing. Yeah, that's a good thing. Works. No, really not. Particularly if a team is open about things and then this person suddenly just leans back and says, oh, no, I don't. No, I got nothing to say here. Sometimes they wait until a group is really close to agreeing on something and then they jump in. They could have brought it up half an hour, hour, 2 hours ago. Then they jump in at the end and point out all the things won't work. And frankly, I always see that as a very calculated approach. I want my negative recommendations to be the last thing people hear before we decide. And I think those kind of political calculations are borderline unprofessional because it's selfish. And if in fact it's a negative, I don't have any problem knowing about the negatives. I have a problem if all you're doing is sharing negatives and you're holding them until the end, when you believe they'll carry more weight rather than mixing them up with all the other ideas and allowing the ideas to fight rather than politics to win the day.
Right. And just to be clear, you're not saying that there's not a time to raise the negatives or raise the risk or raise the issues and bring those up. We're not saying that at all, right?
No, look, it's totally okay to bring up concerns. The naysayer is the person who only brings up concerns, doesn't bring up good points, and believes they gain credibility simply by being the person, I'll be the devil's advocate on this team. Folks, just so you know, there's a lot of data that shows that devil advocate roles don't work. You lose credibility when you do that. It'd be better just to engage in a discussion about good and bad in general. You'll get more credibility on your bad if you bring up good points as well. But yeah, no, there's a time to talk about stuff. Generally, it's early rather than later. You discuss, then you decide, and then you action plan, and then you action.
Right.
And once we decide, we don't, oh, there's going to be a problem. Okay, solve it. Now we're done. We're committed. We've murdered the unchosen alternative. We have a podcast called Professional Subordination, which is, okay, we've decided on X. Even if you lobbied for Y vigorously, once we decide X, Y's dead. And you must support X. And if you're going to cross your arms and roll your eyes and tell us why X won't work, I'm going to find another member to be on my team. And it's not going to be you.
Yeah. I often think of naysayers as being the self-appointed conscience of the group, right? That's how they view themselves.
Well, no, you're saying you think of them that way?
Yeah. Oh. I think they think that's what they think. They think them that they are, right? They think they're doing a service to the organization because if it weren't for them, the organization would go off half-cocked somewhere.
I thought what you were saying is that when a naysayer appears, raises his or her ugly head, say to yourself, Mike Ozan says to himself, aha, the conscience of the organization speaks. I feel better now.
That's what I say in my head, and I say it pretty much in the same tone you just said.
Yeah, exactly. Now look, guys. Yeah, look, we're not going to address whether or not naysayers are working on their own agenda, because we really don't worry too much about folks' individual agendas at Manager Tools. We worry about behavior. We address behavior. And frankly, if you tell a naysayer she's doing the naysaying stuff because it helps her project Y by being against the project X that you're talking about, she will say, no, I'm not. And then nothing you can say will matter to change her behavior, even if you were right and she was, in fact, politically motivated. So don't do it. We don't address intentions. We don't address motivations. We address behaviors. It's not the motivations that are the problem. It's the behaviors, because there are people in the room that are motivated to do something. And if they don't do anything against your project, they're not a problem.
Right. Now, look, answer this, because, I mean, what naysayers will often say, or the people that I think are naysayers, they think they're the conscience of the organization. They have facts. They have valid reasons why something won't work.
Yeah. And you know as well as I do, they're always right. They are. They're always right, folks. Listen to this. We're not saying naysayers are wrong. We're saying they're misbehaving. They're being ineffective. Don't challenge a naysayer about being wrong, because they're right. Virtually everything in the world that works today, even those things around us that work beautifully, elegantly, effortlessly, flawlessly, profitably, there are reasons now, as they are working today so wonderfully, why they oughtn't work that well.
iPhone would be an example of that, right? A lot of people said that wouldn't work.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. And you know what? It's amazing to me. I always feel like there should be somebody keeping track, a media tracker, keeping track of all the prognostications of all the tech people that said, oh, yeah, I think recently, didn't Walt Mossberg of the Wall Street Journal just do the iPhone turn 5? It's been 5 years since summer 2007 when the first one came out, and it turned 5. And they highlighted, a couple of people highlighted a major tech person, might have been a blogger, but I actually think it was a columnist for a major publication saying, the iPhone won't work. It's a closed environment. It's dumb. It's just Apple being pretty, and it's not good, and it won't. I mean, really, really pretty highfalutin reasons why this is going to be a total joke.
Right. No experience with telephony.
And then fascinating enough, like 2 years later, he succumbed and ended up with an iPhone.
Yeah. I wonder how much credit the naysayers got at Apple.
Yeah. So guys, look, we're not saying they're wrong. We're saying they're misbehaving. Okay. You know, the naysayers would have said the design was new, right? Okay. The concept's not tested. Oh, the polling is good, but it's not really great. You got to be careful there. The markets were tight at the time, right? And so, gosh, maybe this won't work. And hey, you know what? I'm not so sure this will work because the communications between our design and engineering people isn't that good. Hey, you know what? I'm not so sure this will work because the communications between engineering and manufacturing really aren't that good. Hey, you know, I'm pretty sure this won't work because the communications between manufacturing and marketing are not that good because there's new people on those teams. So I don't know. I think we got problems here. Yeah, we got problems. Holy crap. We're knee deep. We're waist deep. We're neck deep in problems every day. The question is, how good can you swim? Everybody's got problems. I mean, that's good. Having problems is good. Look, folks, here's the thing. There are reasons every single time why things that may end up working well might also not work worth a flip. If you console yourself with being right while pointing out what won't work about something or what plan won't scale or won't scan or whatever, you're missing the point. The question is not whether there are reasons that something won't work or won't sell or won't be profitable or won't get done in time. That's true for everything. There are always reasons why not. The professional question here is whether or not your issue that you want to talk about is a controlling one. It's so important that all else might be made moot by what you're bringing up as a negative. If you're a closet naysayer out there and you're listening, and maybe you're a manager as well, don't try to impress one of the true professionals around you with what you know won't work. He knows it won't work. Left to its own devices, human energy is what will keep it from not working and have it work. Help him fix it. That's the answer. Hey, look, this is a good idea, and I don't have a better one. Maybe we could get 10% profitability, whereas this would only give 7% margins, but 7% is better than nothing at all, and it's better than our 5 we're getting now. So if you're a closet naysayer, folks, be on the lookout for yourself and catch yourself being right and being ineffective or misbehaving. And look, there are some of you who say, Mark, wait, I'm just pointing out risks. Folks, it's not your job to point out risks. Usually risks are known, okay? If it were really your job just to point out risks, then you would have figured out by now that pointing out risks and how to solve for those risks is the best way to do your job. We could pay anybody to point out the risks. That's not where professionalism is. Yeah. Solving them is.
And the naysayers never have the solution.
Right. And look, something else too. Let's say you do win an argument as a naysayer. You jump in at the last minute, or you say, well, you got to consider this and you got to consider that. I'm not saying this will kill it, but it will make it hard. And you take all the air out of somebody's balloon, and therefore somehow you get to maintain your status quo. You don't have to rearrange your filing system. You get to leave mail the way it is. You don't have to go into new meetings. You get to go home at the same time every night. you probably leave that meeting thinking that everyone else is thankful for your insight, for your candor. They're impressed with your awareness of risks and so on, and you're trying to help everybody else out.
Yeah, that's what they're thinking. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not – trust me, folks. That's not what they're thinking. And if you ever meet me and want to ask me that question, hey, Mark, tell me what they're really thinking. I'll tell you because I won't say it on air.
There you go.
That's what naysayers do.
Now – naysayers, I mean, that's the category of meeting killers that we've talked about so far. But the ones we're going to talk about, that's the one that we think really a focus on behavior is really key in terms of resolving it.
Yeah.
How do we and when do we change behavior?
Yeah, well, first of all, just to reiterate that point, too many managers think that getting to the why of a naysayer's negativity is the way to convert them. But we've discovered that's a bad idea. You won't change them. And you can't win an argument with somebody when you're arguing about their mindset. They'll simply deny it. Now, before we get to a couple of our recommendations, let's briefly address what the journal said. For those of you who may have taken the time to read the article, it's a good one, and whether or not we agreed. One manager in the article said she took serial naysayers, which is kind of whom we've been talking about for the last few minutes here, to lunch. She took them to lunch before a meeting to allow them to vent and try to reach an agreement with them. Now, look, I'm going to start out by saying we don't recommend this very often. I think if I said to 100,000 people here this week, yeah, that's our recommendation. We'd have a lot of people going to a lot of lunches every single time somebody looked the wrong way. And so we don't recommend this as a go-to move. It's a good, we agree with it, but it's not our first recommendation. In a lot of cases for naysayers, what this causes is more of the same behavior. It's basically the squeaky wheel theory. Right. We suspect in this case, no offense to her, that this manager didn't have a good enough relationship with the direct. No evidence in the article that she was doing one-on-ones. And she may be a fabulous manager. Don't get me wrong. I'm not against this manager particularly. She didn't have a good enough relationship with the direct to address their concerns in a one-on-one. Now look, that said, we're glad she tried. It's not a bad idea. It's just inefficient, we think. To her great credit, though, she also said she sets meeting ground rules, which includes anyone who complains or surfaces a problem must also suggest a solution. Now, look, guys, we're big fans of ground rules. Ground rules serve as sort of a sergeant at arms at meetings, and you can have a much better meeting, even if the ground rules aren't that great, simply because people believe they've signed up for a professional meeting and they know what that looks like in general, and they'll avoid things that aren't off limits on the ground rules, simply because you set ground rules as opposed to leaving it as a free for all. And so I love the fact that she sets ground rules. We have tried this one. We're not going to discourage you from doing it, but most managers aren't really good at enforcing the rule that says if you bring up a problem, you have to come up with a solution for it too, because some directs really can, or at least they say they can't come up with a solution for every issue they surface. And then they say, but gosh, I just can't come up with a solution, but I'm sure you want to know what the problem is, right? Ugh. Right. I think if you're creative enough to find the risk, the problem, I think you're creative enough to come up with a solution. It may not be a good solution, but it's a start. If you do enforce that rule, if it's done well, we heartily recommend it.
Good. Okay?
And we're not saying that's the only way, but that's a real good way to solve the problem.
Yeah. Now, there's another recommendation that was in the article that I like to get your take on. And that recommendation was setting aside time early for the problem to be surfaced, then followed by a time for not doing that, right? And making decisions and action planning. What do you think about that?
I think it's a great idea. It's a classic use of ground rules. There's several ideas or concepts that are at work here that keep managers from having effective discussions, action planning, and then therefore the meetings that go around those things. I think one of them we'll talk about later is consensus. Another thing is managers understanding what decision authority they have, and they have a lot more than they realize. Decisions are, in fact, one time where role power is very important. We think you ought to build your managerial success on relationship power. But when it comes to decision, that's all role power. And this idea of consensus, this idea of everybody's voice being heard, I'm sorry, no. Everybody's voice does not need to be heard. I spend a lot of time working with executive teams, and there's always a kitchen cabinet. There's always a small group that's not officially on any org chart, which the CEO turns to for his or her guidance on certain things. Everybody doesn't have to vote. Voting. I mean, I could literally go on a half hour rant about voting. Manager said to me the other day, Hey, I was getting a vote for my people, and I said, "What? I mean, what?" I know. I'm thinking to myself, "This is me. I'm old and crotchety, but this is going to be a bad story." It was funny, but it was definitely bad. So look, we love that. Okay, now look, what do we recommend? It's not hard. We're not going to recommend anything fancy, but you've got to agree on something. We got to agree on something before you're going to be willing to do any of this stuff. Folks, you've got to agree with the principle that it's your job sometimes to quash the naysayers, to get them to be quiet. Your job is not to listen to every voice anytime any of those voices want to speak. You can make yourself available, but you do not have an unlimited amount of time, and not everyone gets to speak all of their mind all of the time in every way, period. By definition, we feel that much of the discussion today about consensus is enormously overrated, and part of the reason it's overrated is because people don't even know what the definition of the word is. And it doesn't mean everybody agrees. There's an enormous difference between consensus, which is no one disagrees strongly enough to fall on their sword, and what people think of it as now, which is everybody agrees. Because right. I'll tell you, the moment you embrace consensus, you're empowering the naysayer. Okay? And look, guys, you're the boss. You not only have to decide, it's your decision. You also have a responsibility, because you have the decision responsibility, you also have the responsibility to set standards for the decision to be made. And one of those standards is that not necessarily that we have to hear every possible problem of a particular project or idea. What's funny is we certainly don't make it a standard that we have to hear every possible benefit. We don't. So it's not effective to say, I want to hear every possible problem. Now, it's okay to brainstorm possible problems, but it's not okay to give people license to say, well, as long as I'm bringing up problems, my voice is going to be heard. Not necessarily. Depends on when and how and about what and the relative merit or risk associated with the problem you're bringing up.
Good. Okay. So what are some of our recommendations specifically?
It's not rocket science. We have four of them. Ground rules. We recommend you abjure consensus. We recommend you intercede in certain situations, and we recommend you give feedback. No surprise there. Let's talk about each one of them. Ground rules. This is a great tool for your team meetings, and they work exceptionally well, even better for project team meetings. In project team meetings, because you have less role power, ground rules being enforceable across a series of meetings make it easier for you. You essentially have a power sharing arrangement with the ground rules that people have signed up for. So one of the ground rules you set is what I call time and place. That means that there's a time and place for stuff, and attendees can't come in at the last minute and try to unravel things. This is what we mentioned earlier, that there's a time to discuss. And during discussion, we bring up pros and cons and argue about costs and benefits and so on. And then we decide. And once we decide, we're done discussing risks. The only risks are inefficient or ineffective execution on the plan relative to the decision we've already made. And by the way, the naysayer who comes to you afterwards says, I didn't want to say anything during the discussion, but now I have something to say.
Really?
I'll tell you, if I had a really good relationship with them, I would probably say, this is not feedback, but I want you to be clear. If you don't want to say it during discussion, I don't want to hear it now. If the only criteria is whether we want to do something, I'm going to use the same criteria you did and say, you didn't want to say it then, I don't want to hear it now. And if the guy turns around, starts walking to my office and goes, well, I tried, I'll turn to him and go, no, you didn't. You bailed. You abdicated. You had a chance and you chose not to speak. You haven't told me why, other than you were uncomfortable or something. I don't know what it was. But if the standard is what we want to do, that's easy. You didn't want to talk then. I don't want to listen now. It's not effective for me to listen now, just like it's not effective for you to talk now. You know, we're not going to decide next month whether we're going to do this or not. We already decided. You can't come to me in a month and say you've made a decision. The decision's already been made. You can't ask for vacation this week and then take it next week. That's not the way it works. There's a time and place for things. Another ground rule that we discussed a minute ago was discuss, decide, and act in that order. I've used this a lot. I call it DDA, discuss, decide, act. We're going to discuss, and then once we decide, we're going to act. There's no discussing after we decided and we're acting, other than discussing about how we're going to act, not what the risks are. It's okay to bring up problems when we're discussing things. We do want to, folks, we want to hear about potential problems when we're discussing them. But once we've agreed it's time to decide, no more problems. If we decide to go forward, at that point, we're not going to hear about any more problems. Your interest in helping us understand the risks is too little, too late, no voice for you. I love you. Sorry, not listening.
Okay. You mentioned another idea, abjure consensus.
Yeah, abjure consensus. For those of you who don't know, abjure means to condemn, resoundingly condemn, to say, no, I'm not going to do that thing, consensus.
Condemn with prejudice.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good one. Yeah. Part of more naysaying comes from increased specialization of labor, which I think will only continue in the next 50 years. One of the reasons for naysaying nowadays is a misguided desire, I've alluded to this already, to achieve consensus. Consensus is used much too often by managers today. And I provide a simple test to managers, say, yeah, we're working on a consensus. I'm like, no, pre-wire it. Don't get a consensus. Pre-wire it. Get everybody to vote yes. Compromise. Don't go for consensus. But anyway, simple test. Suppose you and your team reach consensus on something and you find out later it was a big mistake. When your boss holds you accountable, will it help you to say to her, but we had consensus on this? All you're doing there is throwing your team under the bus with you. You want to drag. No, you're not throwing your team under the bus. You're under the bus and you're saying, boss, wait, let me drag the rest of my team down here with me. And then you can go ahead and gun that thing right over the top of us. Bumpity bumpity bump. No, you wouldn't do that. Look, managers, we need to be willing. Let me say it differently. You need to be willing to make decisions yourselves. Okay. I heard what you say. I think X. And part of the reason I changed from we to you is because the willingness to make a decision is not a problem Mike and I have. It's one of the few times where we actually are comfortable with our managerial abilities. We're trying to get better all the time. We've alluded to mistakes we've made in the past. They are legion, but this is not one of them.
Sometimes they're not good decisions.
Oh, yeah. We were on a call a couple weeks ago, and somebody says, what should we do? I said, I'll tell you, we're going to do X. And it was just dead silence on the call. I think they were thinking there was going to be a discussion, but I had already decided. And in this case, I'm the manager, so I decided. And I said, okay. Wendy said, no, we got that. We were past the point of discussion. And I don't do that every day, five times a day. But when I do it, I have the authority because of my role and because of my relationships with my people. And so they follow, or at least they they don't not follow. Let's put it that way. It was very quiet for a few seconds after I said that. And by the way, quietness is not the end of the world, folks. It's okay to make a decision. Your job is not to be popular. Your job is to be effective. And sometimes effectiveness and popularity are two very different things. So avoid consensus. It sends the wrong message. It creates the wrong behaviors. Tell people, I really want to hear from you. And then I'll decide. If you want to use the phrase, we'll decide, fine. But ultimately, you're the one that's deciding. The team is not authorized to decide. Some teams actually are, but it's still pretty rare. There's a lot of talk about that, but it's still fairly rare. Heck, there are companies without managers, but that's pretty rare too.
There you go. Now, another thing you can do is intercede, right? When you believe someone is naysaying, just interrupt them.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get this. It's like, oh no, everybody gets to talk. No, they don't. Wendy and I talk all the time, 20, 30, 40 times a day. And I said, what do you think? She says, X. I said, oh, I was thinking Y. Okay, we'll do it your way. She's like, okay, we'll try my way. I said, yeah, I'm not sure my way is better. And your way seems pretty straightforward. Let's do that. But if we're having a discussion and someone starts naysaying, it's totally okay to say, hey, Bob, I'm sorry. Let me just interrupt you here. I hear you. And we're going to set that issue aside. Okay. And when Bob says, well, Mark, I don't think it. No, I get it. No, I'm good with it. I've decided that's just not as big an issue as everybody says it is. Or I'll be able to take care of that. It's not going to be an issue. Or you could say, hey, thanks, Bob, but I've thought about that and I don't think it's an issue. Or, hey, Bob, I see your point and I don't agree. So we're going to table that. Or I'm going to overrule you there. I hear you. And I'm going to overrule you as that being a big issue. Or, hey, Bob, I hear you. There's no perfect solution. Thanks, but enough on Bob's objection.
You know, the thing about this particular solution is, in my experience, it's terribly effective. It works quite well, but it's rarely used. It's amazing to me how infrequently it's used.
Yeah, I think there's a lesson there about managers not being willing to take the decision power and frankly, not being willing to force the ground rules, provided you have a ground rule that addresses the idea of naysaying. Now, again, we don't have any problem with somebody when we're discussing things. Say, I've got a concern about a risk. Okay, share it. And he brings out the risk, and we've talked about 7 or 8 risks and maybe 4 or 5 benefits. And you say, okay, what do you guys think? You can consider the risk, you can consider benefits. What do you think? Give me your input. And while everybody else goes, yeah, the thing Bob brought up really concerns us. And so they all say, I don't think we should do this. You could literally say to them and say, guys, thanks. And I've already minimized Bob's input on that idea. I disagree with Bob on that. And so if that were not an issue, how would y'all feel? And everybody goes, no, I think it's good then. Then I'd say, okay, good. That's our decision. The ultimate example of this, which many of you will write emails to me and say, that was a bad example. It's one of my all-time favorites. It's in the book Executive Decisions, I think, by Tom Clancy. Tells a story of the U.S. CEO, the president, having a meeting when there's a biological attack and there's some question about whether or not the president has the constitutional authority to stop interstate transport. In the United States, folks, for those of you who don't know, it really is the United States of America, and power is given to the states, and the government can't impede interstate travel. It's supposed to help it. It can regulate it, but it's not supposed to stop it. On the other hand, the president is also supposed to protect the country. And if, in fact, there's a chance that an airborne biological agent could infect the entire country by interstate transport, you have to balance, you know, the two competing challenges in the fundamental political makeup. And as it turns out, he says to his cabinet, hey, what do you think we should do? And they talk for like an hour, hour and a half, I think, in the book. And then they all come back to him and he says, okay, pony up, tell me what you think. And then he goes around the room and it's like 17-1. They say, nope, you can't shut down interstate commerce. It's just not, you can't do it. It's against the law. And the president goes, okay, thanks. I appreciate it. I've decided we're going to shut down interstate commerce. It's just a great moment of leadership. It may not be management. It's more of leadership. And stunned the Secretary of Transportation, the cabinet person who would be responsible really for implementing some of it, says, well, Mr. President, I'm not sure I agree with you there. And he says, that's fine. I accept your resignation. And he turns right to his deputy, who I think in the book happens to be a woman, and says, are you willing to take over? She says, yes, sir. Are you willing to do what I ask? Yes, sir. Okay, we're there. Now, guys, we're not saying that that was a good example of naysaying. It is an example of someone who's comfortable with their decision-making authority. Should you do that all the time? Of course not. Could you, as a manager, hear everybody say things and then say, I'm sorry, no, we're going to do it this way? Sure you could. In fact, it's happened to you. And some of the stuff your boss has done over your objections turned out just fine. And I encourage you to listen to the podcast about professional subordination. And we really believe that stuff. Some of you probably don't think we do, but we think that if your boss hears from you and you want to do X and your boss decides on Y, you have an obligation to put X to bed and to work on Y, and not to bitch or moan or complain to your friends or to your peers or to your team, but to work on Y. And when your team says, gee, I thought we're going to do X, so did I, and now we're doing Y and we're going to do it well. As simple as that. So I think interceding is good. And yeah, voices do get to be heard, but not every idea is of equal value. And frankly, in my opinion, when a risk is equal to a benefit, I think the risk is actually less than the benefit, simply because there's always risks with everything. It's okay to want to hear from people, but let's keep separate hearing from doing, okay? Interceding, when somebody gets outside of the bounds of what you believe is an effective decision-making process, is a completely appropriate way to keep that person and everybody else from believing that every possible risk is worthy of full discussion, because it's not. You can shape the debate by what you allow to be discussed and what you want to be shared, but maybe then tabled, and that's okay. You can't simply use this as a sledgehammer and say, I hear you now, I hear you now, I hear you now, because people will walk away from you then emotionally. They won't connect with you. You won't have good relationships. You'll undermine the relationships. But periodically you can. And I think far too few managers appreciate their ability, their responsibility to make decisions. And that leads to naysayers taking advantage of it.
Okay, so folks, you knew this was coming. And here it comes, right? So if someone proves to you that they have a long-standing track record of being a naysayer,
right,
it's time for, drumroll please, feedback.
Yeah, you don't actually have to. I mean, if you have a good relationship with somebody and you've been giving them positive and negative feedback and they do a naysayer move, one of the ones we talked about earlier, you don't have to wait. But I would be careful. If they do it one time, I wouldn't label them a naysayer. I would just ask myself, Could I give them some casual negative feedback about that? And if you could, go ahead. On the other hand, if you want to wait to see whether or not there's a pattern, then fine, wait. And by the way, we've got more detailed guidance about feedback. Go to the website. For those of you with licenses, you can click on the link in the show notes and it'll take you to the website, which will have all the casts about feedback. But when you have a moment alone with them, you ask them, hey, can I give you some feedback? Can I share something with you? Can I make an observation? Can I point something out? And then you say to them, when you bring up a point of risk that late in the discussion, it comes across as a political move by you to kill an idea. Can you change that for me? Okay. Or, hey, can you give some feedback? When you point out something that there's a risk without any solution, I don't think that's terribly helpful and not really leader-like. Can you include a solution next time? Thanks. Or, hey, can I give some feedback? When you tell everyone how you've seen this go wrong before, it comes across probably a little bit more negative than you intend, rather than it being helpful, which I hope that's the way you meant it. Can you think about how to do that better next time? That's all. All you're doing is pointing out, hey, that wasn't helpful. Let's do that different next time. It's not wrong. It's effective. It's polite. It's casual. It addresses the specific behavior that they did, not the intent that they had to try to submarine you. Now, that said, you don't use feedback to a more senior person if you're a project team lead. That's just a bad idea. Feedback doesn't work up, even if they're assigned to you on a project team. On the other hand, ground rules, abjuring consensus, and interceding all work fine. Although interceding, you have to be careful. It depends on your relationship with the senior person. Probably the best way to handle a senior person who's a project team member of yours is pre-wiring if you feel that person is not on your side. And that might be a case where lunch would be helpful, but not lunch all the time. Otherwise, that's all you'll be doing is lunch with all your directs.
Yeah. And folks, there's a podcast for that.
Yeah, there is.
And if you haven't listened to the pre-wiring podcast, you
one
have,
of my top 10.
Yeah, it's my top five for sure.
Yeah. And that's it. Look, the naysayers happen. You know them. Many of you conjured up a person within 5 minutes of the start of this cast. Ground rules help meetings. And what helps even more is a manager's willingness to enforce them to deliver better results, not just to pinch people, but to create better results. Naysayers are, whether they admit it or not, working against your team's effectiveness. And we don't stand for that as effective managers. If you're the manager, deny them their opportunities to do so, particularly when it's late in the game, and give them feedback about it. Even if you're on a project team and you have less direct authority, you can still insist on following some ground rules and delivering some feedback. Because frankly, even if you're uncomfortable doing it, everybody on your team wishes you would, because they hate the naysayer too.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate it, my friend. I love that one.
My pleasure, partner.
All right, we'll see you. Thanks, everyone. That's it. We'll see you next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.